Hey, it's Andrew Morgan, host of the Nomcast, the Netflix original movie podcast. Each week, we review the biggest Netflix original movies with special guests from the film industry, the music industry, comedians, and of course, our fellow podcasters. Check us out on the web at nomcastpod.com. Follow us on the socials at nomcastpod. And most importantly, listen and subscribe to us wherever you get podcasts. Hit that beat one time.
I'm Pat Whalen.
And I'm Mike Field. And throughout the history of cinema, nothing can compare with the phenomena of the MCU.
Each episode, we'll tackle one film and discuss the differences between the comic book and what's on screen. We'll explore the growth of the Marvel Cinematic Universe from its inception to present day and beyond. And we'll have a little fun along the way.
We may not have been first, or second, or even 48th, but we're hoping you'll take the journey with us into the MCU as we are yet another MCU podcast. You can find us on Instagram or wherever you get your podcasts today.
Ladies and gentlemen, please notice that exits are conveniently located at the front and rear of this auditorium.
When leaving the theater, we suggest that you die!
Hello, I'm Mike Butler.
And I'm Mike Field.
And you're listening to the Forgotten Horror Podcast. Scared yet?
You will be.
Each episode, we highlight a horror movie that, for a variety of reasons, was forgotten by audience. It could be because a scarier, creepier movie was released at the same time. Perhaps audience were accidentally transported into an alternate universe. Or maybe audiences didn't see enough of the movie through their hands over their eyes because they were scared. You see where we're going with that. We'll break down the movie as well as discuss what we like or don't like about the movie, but we'll always suggest that you bring this movie
back from the dead
for a revisit. If you're not too afraid of our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are available.
Ever since his parents were murdered by vampires, Jack Crow has had one purpose in life, putting stakes through bloodsuckers' hearts. With this battle-hardened crew of vampire killers and the assistance of the Catholic Church, Crow roams the New Mexico desert looking for undead lairs to annihilate. But he meets his match when at a roadside motel he comes face to face with Jan Valak, a vampire kingpin possessed of incredible powers. This is John Carpenter's Vampires.
I think that's how we should do every synopsis now. Just say it like different trailer guys.
Ooh, nice, nice. Yes, we are doing John Carpenter's Vampires. Here we go. Oh, boy. So released Friday, October 30th, 1998. Runtime of 108 minutes. Rated R. Production budget of $20 million. Its opening weekend, it did $9 million. Its opening weekend was Halloween and it only did $9 million. Domestic, $20 million. Worldwide, $20 million. Not great.
I always think Halloween is a weird release date.
It is.
Because it's like you're done with, like, quote unquote, Spooktober at that point. Like
Spooktober.
As soon as the 31st ends, you're now in the holidays. So it's kind of, it's rough.
I will say this, though. Let's take the pandemic off the board right now. Okay, let's before the pandemic, because obviously I can understand why people don't want to have their kids go out for Halloween this year, which right. I think I want my kids to go out, but whatever. I think parents are a little bit anxiety riddled about Halloween. So there's a lot more like trunk or treat stuff now. There's a lot more, you know, let's stay home and have a Halloween party. Like, they just don't do it as much anymore, I don't right. think, which is unfortunate because trick-or-treating is awesome. You know how much candy you get? I had candy that lasts until Christmas, for crying out loud.
You get so much candy. Every house was decorated. So it was like you were going, like, I love, like, I sit on this podcast. So I go to Halloween Horror Nights every year at Universal.
Except this Not year. This year.
I love that kind of, like, horror maze, Halloween decoration stuff I always have ever since I was little and back when I was a kid. I'm sure back when you were a kid, every house was decorated and it was fun going to every house and seeing little Halloween decorations and seeing how much work went into it and everybody's costumes and everybody walking around as a different spooky monster or whatever, or superhero, whatever they were.
Right. Not to get off this movie, but I always thought that the movie Trick or Treat, when they have the Halloween festival in the downtown area, I always wanted that.
I always wanted that experience. Like the whole town has the Halloween festivities.
Oh, that would be awesome.
But we never had that.
Milford tried it a couple times, but it never really took off.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you going
to
do?
You know, Trick or Treat would be a good movie to watch on a watch party.
It would. All right, so we're talking about vampires, though. Production company is a lot of them. Columbia Pictures, Film Office, JVC Entertainment Networks, Largo Entertainment, Spooky Tooth Productions, and Storm King Productions.
Who's Spooky Tooth?
I don't know. It's somebody.
I love it.
It's distributed by Sony Pictures Releasing. So this movie came out on the 30th, like I said. It also went up against an unlimited release, American History X, and Living Out Loud. American History X is the Edward Norton movie.
Right.
That he re-edited. That was like, that's like the big thing about that movie was two things. One, that he controlled the edit and the director, him fought and he left. Tony Gilroy, I believe, was the director. That might be wrong. And then and also the sound of the guy's teeth on the curb haunts me to this day. And then on the 23rd, which is before this, you had Soldier, which is the Kurt Russell, what the best word to describe it? It's almost like Universal Soldier, but it's Kurt Russell.
Right.
Pleasantville, which is awesome. Apt Pupil and an unlimited release, Orgasmo and Life is Beautiful, two opposite end spectrum movies. November 6th, you had The Waterboy, The Siege, Belly, and an unlimited Velvet Goldmine and Elizabeth. So Waterboy was... I know a lot of people don't like The Waterboy, but it was anticipated, and Pleasantville's just really good. So that got some decent movies around it.
Waterboy is okay. It's got a lot of good, funny quotes.
Yeah,
it's not a great movie. It's not one of his best, but
any movie that he does a funny voice is usually not a good one.
Like Little Nicky.
Oh, Little Nicky's not good at all. We're talking about Adam Sandler. directed by John Carpenter, if you didn't know from the title, he has done Halloween, Escape from New York, The Thing, which is awesome, and The Fog. Written by Don Jacoby, who did Arachnophobia, another good one, Blue Thunder, and The Philadelphia Experiment. This is based on a novel written by John Stakely. He also has another novel called Armor. This novel is called Vampires, and the S is a dollar sign in the title.
Because they're bounty hunters for hire.
Is that why?
I think that's what I do like, and I didn't notice this. This is the first time I'm realizing it. His last name is Stakely, and there's vampires. And
nice.
Stakely, yeah.
You know. Nice. There's also an uncredited rewrite for Dan Mazur, who's also in The Night of the Scarecrow. I guess Carpenter was given two scripts at the beginning of this movie. One was from Mazur and one was from Jacoby. And then himself, Carpenter, and Larry Sulkis took both scripts and made them into one. But they never gave Mazur any credit for some unknown reason. But he is, so basically he wrote another script that they kind of took from, but they didn't bother to give him credit, which I don't understand. I guess Hollywood, and I guess that's what I'm going to say here, is why you didn't, why he didn't get credit. But regardless of that. Cinematography by Gary Kibbe, or Kib. He has done Prince of Darkness, They Live, Village of the Damned. Those are all Carpenter films. Composed by John Carpenter, who he does most of the time. He's famous Halloween score. Edited by Edward Warshilka. I apologize if I got that wrong. He has done Big Trouble in Little China, The Running Man, and 13 Ghosts. And produced by Sandy King, who's done most of Carpenter's stuff. I believe that's his wife. I don't know if it's still his wife, but I believe that's his wife.
I think it's still his wife.
Who knows? James Woods. Oh, boy. As Jack Crow. He is nominated for an Oscar for Salvador, Ghosts of Mississippi. He's also in Videodrome and Digstown. I believe I have Digstown on our list, Butler.
You do have Digstown on our list.
Daniel Baldwin as Montoya. He is from the TV show Homicide, Mulholland Falls, and Grey Gardens. Cheryl Lee as Katrina. She is in the TV show Twin Peaks, where she played Butler.
Don't do this to me, man.
I'm pretty sure you played Laura Palmer, right?
She did play Laura Palmer.
Jesus,
yeah.
This is your show. You like that show.
I just, for some reason, the last four episodes just keep blanking on everything you're pointing to me at.
Whew. She's also in Backbeat. She's also in Backbeat, Winter's Bone, and Cafe Society. We have Thomas Ian Griffith as Valak, who is the bad guy in Karate Kid Part 3. He was one that takes over Cobra Kai and teaches Daniel LaRusso how to fight dirty. He's also in Call the Conqueror. He might actually be in the new Cobra Kai show. I don't know. He might come back. I don't know. Maybe not. The Grimm.
Get off your Cobra.
He's also, he was a writer producer for the Grimm TV show. I don't know. I never got into that. Yeah. Yeah, I never
it was
got
like cheesy
it.
Supernatural.
It's like
cheesy Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I never watched Supernatural. It's got to really be a good show for me to jump onto that, because I've seen like X-Files and stuff. Like I've seen it done well.
Supernatural's not. It's pulpy. It's not really X-Files.
But no, yeah. I'm saying that in that same vein, that sci-fi mystery kind of. I tried to watch that monsters. Warehouse 13 on sci-fi when that came out a while ago, and it was just too hokey for me. I couldn't
get
into
Warehouse
it.
13, yeah.
Yeah. Maximilian Schell as Cardinal Alba. Now, Maximilian Schell is a fantastic actor. He was won an Oscar for Judgment at Nuremberg. He's also nominated for Julia in The Man in the Glass Booth. He's also in A Bridge Too Far and Deep Impact. He also was nominated for a Best Foreign Language Film in The Pedestrian and First Love. Quite the actor. Tim Guiney as Father Adam. He's in the TV show Homeland. He's also in Iron Man, 99 Homes, Harriet, more recently, and Blade. Mark Boone Jr. as Catelyn. He is from the TV show Sons of Anarchy. It's probably where a lot of people know him from. He's also 30 Days a Night and Halloween 2. I believe that's the, I don't know if that's the Halloween 2 that Carpenter did. I don't think so. It might have been the Halloween 2 that Rob Zombie did. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Gregory Sierra as Father Giovanni. He's in the TV show Barney Miller, which people would probably notice him more. Papillion and The Towering Inferno, good movie. And then I can't say his name, Butler, but he's in Mortal Kombat.
Kerry Tagawa?
Tagawa, yeah.
I don't know why you can't say Tagawa.
No, I can't say Hiroyuki.
Hiroyuki?
Yeah. Because I don't want to damage, I don't want to, you know,
so just
butcher
say
the name.
Kerry Tagawa.
Kerry Tagawa is David Dio. He's in Mortal Kombat, which is an episode we did, Butler. Kubo and Two Strings, the TV show The Man in High Castle. And then, yeah. So that's it.
Nice.
All right, Butler. This is our first forgotten horror film. So it's obvious. Don't laugh every time I say that. So it's obviously a horror movie.
Yes.
It was only made $20 million. I said it split, but I have here that its video rental and home purchase sales was $42 million. And that while there's no numbers online, Carpenter claims that this movie is a huge success overseas. So
I could believe that they made two direct-to-video sequels,
which are called what?
Vampire 2.
No, Vampires Los Muertos.
Los Muertos. And the third one, I don't even have a note.
Vampires The Turning.
And they don't have any. The Turning has nothing to do with anything in the original.
Correct.
It's just the name alone.
Which, yeah.
And then Los Muertos at least has the sect of vampire hunters that James Woods is.
Right.
And
right.
It kind of has something to do with the cross.
It
loosely ties the story together.
Right, right. So this also movie comes out when Carpenter is not, it doesn't have a lot of commercial success with his films or critical success. He's got a dry spell. This film actually convinces him to keep directing because he had such a good time doing it, but he was not doing like well in the box office, I guess. But he had fun on the set.
He's only had two movies that made money or three movies that were profitable.
Well, I mean, technically the thing's a critical success. I don't know if it was financial success.
I think, yeah. The
Big
thing,
Trouble.
The Thing and no, not Big Trouble. The Thing and Halloween.
But Big Trouble is you. But honestly,
a cult classic.
Yeah.
No, I get that. Yeah. People like his movies, but I think The Thing and Halloween are the only two commercials critical successes he had.
Well, Halloween is known for before the Blood Witch Project came out. Halloween was the low budget indie movie that you know had the biggest upside, the biggest
profit.
Yeah. And then Blair Witch came out, which is. Yeah, it's just, you know, 5 minutes of let's talk and then fight. Halloween was what obviously he's always known for, but you know, I can give you five movies or I can list off the movies that I like that he did, but whether they were financial success, I think you're right. They're tough. They're not, cause even this movie,
they're not scary.
Well, they're not scary,
well,
but
the Thing has some creepy monsters,
but there's an indie kind of like an independent vibe or not real slick. Like it's just like, okay, let's get it done. That's good enough. Let's shoot. Like
it's move from pickup to pickup.
Right. Right. It's very like there's in the moment in the beginning of the movie when he's like, bless us, Padre. They're like, let's go, Padre. And they bless them before they walk in. And they cut to a shot of them just standing. Like they're like, let's go. And they start walking. And then it cuts to a shot of them standing. And then they wait and then they just start walking. It's all for like movie effect.
Right.
Yeah.
He doesn't waste time but he doesn't really give you that stuff that a slicker movie would have, those extra
Correct.
Shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very like almost like he did a storyboard in his head and he didn't bother to fill it in with like the stuff. So how did they get there? No. See, in my storyboard, they're just there now. But okay. Continuity. No. Okay.
So you watched this movie when you were younger, because this is 98.
98. I probably inappropriately watched it in 98.
Yep, yep. It didn't scare you at all?
No.
Vampires
don't really scare me. The only thing, when I was a kid, ghosts scared me.
Okay.
And like Chucky scared me. Like living dolls scared me. Okay. Like, I didn't watch Puppet Master until later. But like Chucky, basically Chucky, or like things with ghosts.
Okay.
Things like you couldn't see. But as soon as you show me a monster, or you show me a creature, or you show me an alien, I'm all in. I'm excited about
it. Now, did you like James Woods in this movie?
I usually always like James Woods. He's got this like bravado to him that works. Like,
he's cocky.
He's really cocky, which really works in a lot of the films he's in.
That's usually like most of his movies. He's just this like cocky SOB kind of thing, with the exception of some of them. I mean, probably more recently. I mean, obviously he's a little bit off the deep end recently, but in terms of in real life, but in this movie, that's like his shtick almost, like that he does that well.
Right. Yeah. And it kind of works. Like, he just turned 50 when he did this movie, so he wanted to do an action movie. He'd never done one before.
And that's hard living 50.
But the thing that carries him is he's not like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, you believe he can fight these vampires because he's just like such a cocky ass that it's just like, that's what kind of gets him through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he carries it well. I think that's the thing I remember most about vampires is it's James Woods as James Woods hunting vampires.
Pretty much.
Which, when you're watching a little kid, you know, especially someone who really grew up like loving John McClane's added the sarcasm and stuff like that, it's like, it's pretty cool. Now watching it on the rewatch, there's some stuff I like and some stuff I don't like about it. But I think that's the thing I remember most about it is James Woods' performance.
Well, the whole movie starts off where they go into that house to kill all those vampires, and that's kind of sets off the plot of the movie. Well, not really, because the, what is it? What do they call him? The, not the maker.
He's the master.
The master, or the whoever the leader of
the nest
is. He's not there, so they don't kill him. But then he goes, and so they kill all these vampires. Then they go to the hotel. And apparently, the worst sheriff in the world is getting them hookers and beer and drugs and not caring about it, whatever. Oh, should go rob a liquor store. What do I care? It's like, oh boy.
Well, it's like, beats the 50 murders we've had.
So they go back and they just party hard, which we'll get to that. So he doesn't really set it off because the master's there because he's searching for, what is it again? The Black Cross?
He wants the Black Cross. Basically, he does go to the hotel for revenge. Because they killed his nest, but that's incidental to what he actually wants to do.
But it's a little convenient that
it's very convenient that happens to be the one vampire that gets away is the one that has a master plan of turning vampires.
Well, the idea too is that the Cardinal Abbas sets James Woods' character up.
Yes,
so he's the one that tells he tells Valak that. I guess he tells him something that he's coming, but then if he knew he was coming, he should have set a trap for him at the lair, at the nest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't make any sense that he just lets his nest die and then acts revenge when he already knew who he was. He knew he was coming. So that was a little bit, just a little weird, a little hanky. Like, okay, well, what's first here? So let's go to the scene when they're in the hotel room. So all the vampire hunters are in the hotel room and they've procured themselves some women for the night.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest hotel room I've ever seen.
Well, it's a double.
Okay. So they procure themselves some women and they procure themselves some liquor and they're just having some liquor. Right. They're having a raunchy good time. But the problem is, okay, number one, some of these women are not what I would call working girls. Like, you know what I mean? They're just kind of like, they just like pick these people off the street almost.
It's a small town,
I guess. Okay. And the one guy, so in the beginning of the movie, when they go in, the guy that opens up, I think it's Ramirez, right? He calls him the guy with the ponytail.
Yeah.
He opens up the door and he's like, and like he screws up and like the dead guy falls and scares him. So right off the bat, does this guy know what he's doing? But in the scene when they are in the hotel room, he is just sitting there randomly throwing things. Like, all he's doing is throwing things where they cut to a shot of him. And then he's just like, and he's shaking and he grabs a lamp and just throws it out the window. What are you doing?
It's like he's on somewhere like PCP or something. Yeah. Yeah. It's really weird.
Yeah. These guys are supposed to be professional killers. Valak shows up and like
they can't shoot for nothing.
They can't do anything. Like, it's, I don't get it.
One of them shoots the hooker instead of Valak.
Yeah.
Bullets are flying everywhere. Missing.
And to our point before about how we were talking about Carpenter's technical style of directing and setting up shots, like there's like James Woods jumps in and dives, and it's the worst dive. And it's not, I may be nitpicky, but it's not as smooth as maybe you'd want to see.
John Carpenter is good at like slow reveals mm-hmm. and holding on creepy creatures.
Sure.
But yeah, action requires a different kind of directing style and a knowledge of continuity and fluidity and stuff like you're describing. So when janky shots of them, let's go, and all of a sudden being at the house, when you're watching an action movie and stuff like that happens, let's fire. And now I'm on the other side of them, and now I'm firing from the other side. How did you get from side A to side B?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, this will look cool. Jump across the room, James. It's just, it's very, like you said, like almost college indie style.
Yeah.
Just like, let's throw a bunch of really cool shots together and see what we get.
And that's not a knock. That's just how Kevin Smith's like that too. Kevin Smith's obviously dialogue heavy. That's his thing. That's his lane for all intents and purposes. That's what he does best. And he knows that. And that's great. And that's why I watch a Kevin Smith film, because that's what I want. I'm not going to watch a Kevin Smith or a John Carpenter film expecting, you know, something like a Skyfall or a Spectre or something, like a James Bond style movie. Right.
They call this a neo-noir Western vampire movie, much like
Near Dark.
Yep. But it's really, it kind of is in that it's a Western town and stuff like that, but it's not the same as Near Dark.
No, and they clearly rip off the Near Dark poster in their art, because it's the same. Oh, yeah. Like that, the image on the poster has nothing to do with anything in this movie, with the exception of it looks like Near Dark. Let's remind people of Near Dark.
This is John Carpenter's action movie. This is his... Well, Assault on Precinct 13.
They live as action too, though.
Yeah,
he has action.
It's mostly horror.
He does horror, and then he has action within the horror. He just doesn't do a straight action movie ever.
So a lot of these scenes in Vampire are straight action.
Right.
They might be super powered monsters, but they're this scene in the hotel, scene at the beginning of the house. Which the scene at the beginning of the house, the action is. Because it's more montage.
It's okay.
I think that kind of allows that to happen. The jailhouse and then outside in the streets.
Yeah.
So you get those kind of four action beats.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely the worst of the action beats in terms of...
In the hotel room?
Trying to follow what's going on. But I think that's also possibly on purpose, because it's the madness of what's going on. And they're all drunk, I guess, which could be his excuse on how they can't shoot. 8 foot tall.
They're
vampire.
Not. Yeah, I guess. Is he supposed to be 8 foot tall?
No, he's tall. But I do like how his when he puts his hand through the guy. And
Mark Boone Jr. Yeah, Catlin. Yeah,
I'm like, cool.
That's a nice effect. Like there's some nice blood effects in this movie, and they had to tone it down because they got an NC-17 for the gore, so they had to kind of
cut three minutes of gore to avoid.
But the stuff that they left on screen, I was like, it's not that bad. I mean, I like when they have the effect when he splits in half, because you know it looks fake. You know it's not real, but
you just appreciate the
but
effect.
You like that.
Yeah.
Like there's like, oh, it's got to be as super realistic as possible. But then there's like, it's clearly not. And this is what it. But people appreciate that. I think people appreciate it because it's fun to watch. It's like, oh man. But also they appreciate it like, oh, I can't. That's great how they did that.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be so realistic. I think that's probably what I'm trying to get at there. And I think with Carpenter, you have that. Even in The Thing, you've got stuff like that.
Well, the thing, yeah, the creatures are all obviously pretty fake.
No, but it looks awesome. Like the head coming out with the spider and stuff. Like it's awesome.
It's so creative and well done that you're just like, the imagination that goes into it is what you appreciate.
Right. I think it's kind of like, it's almost like a little peek behind the curtain of filmmaking, but you're okay with that. You know what I mean? Like you're okay with that. And I think that's, you know, why I think Carpenter is successful in terms of also why Carpenter's films will keep getting replay. Like Carpenter doesn't make, I'll put it this way, Carpenter doesn't make movies for the critics. He makes movies for the audience.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? And the audience will always make your film a cult classic. Your audience will always extend the life of your film longer than any critic will. It doesn't matter how many times a critic will tell you, this movie's so fantastic, the Oscar darling. It's like, but like you never hear from them again, because the audience decides what movie lasts longer. And Carpenter has a lot more of those.
Right.
But this wasn't going to be a Carpenter film. This was going to be a Russell Mulcahy film. This was his project in the 90s. Do you remember what the old plot was?
The old plot was a futuristic society of vampires and a police group going up against them.
The vampire hunters were like the police.
Yeah,
weird.
It was nothing. I mean, this is very loosely the book.
No, this is not like, but very loose. Like this was supposed to be like, they were going after the Pope to make a Pope one of them, but that was nothing in the book. Yeah.
But this has certain elements that are, at least loosely, like, all right, the other story was nothing from the book.
Right.
No plot points, no characters, no theming, no locations. Was nothing like the book. Not that I've read the book, but I read the Wikipedia on the book.
Right. That's good enough.
Exactly. Good enough for what we're talking about here. But at the same time, I kind of would have wanted to see that movie, but I think they made a movie like that, didn't they? Like a futuristic society of vampires kind of thing. And it had, might have had Ethan Hawke.
I don't know.
I'd have to look it up. I'm sure somebody will comment about it.
No one will comment. No one listens to us.
Sure. But I'm sure I'll think of it also like 5 minutes after the podcast ends.
Do you know
that they did something like that?
Do you know the two guys that were supposed to be in the Russell Mulcahy movie?
I don't recall.
So Willem Dafoe and Dolph Lundgren.
I remember Dolph Lundgren. Willem Dafoe is an interesting choice.
Well, I would assume he was the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. He looks like he's straight up a vampire. If you told me he was the first vampire, I'd be like, yep. But that's why he played Max Shrek, right? Not Max Shrek.
Who are we talking about?
Back in Batman Returns.
Oscorp? Norman?
When he played, because he looks like a goblin. But he played in the making of the movie about the making of Nosferatu, where he was the real vampire.
Oh, yeah.
His character had a name. I think it was Max. I feel like it was Max Shrek. Okay. But yeah, that's why they had him in there, because he looks...
Oh, yeah.
He's got very sharp features. Let's put it that way.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, I think he would have been good. Dolph Lundgren, I mean, I'm sure he was going to play Jack Crow. I mean, that's just kind
of
like...
It would have been more of an action film. It would
have been like, all right, yep, well, that's... You're clearly there to hunt something. Come on. Like, James Woods, yeah, he doesn't look like he... Like, he looks like he would hunt something, but he's not so overblown. It's like... It's not a parody of an action star.
Right. So let's go to some things in the movie that happen that I just don't understand. When Valak goes to the hotel, before he goes in, he ends up going into another room to hook up with Katrina.
I think he sees that James Woods is about to hook up with her. He doesn't really know their relationship, but knows that, that's his lady. Let me mess her up first.
Speaking of Katrina, they take her and, he's like, oh, we can use her. There's a telepathic link. They toss that line in there so that we're supposed to be like the reason why they take her. They take her to a hotel room and he leaves. He's got to go meet up. Jack Crow leaves to go tell the Cardinal, the update. So he leaves Montoya, which is Daniel Baldwin, in charge of her. So the next time you see Katrina, she's nude. Like, she's just laying on the bed nude for no reason. No reason why she's like that.
I'll tell you why she's like that.
Go ahead.
For tickets.
Okay.
But there's nudity in this movie. Let's go.
Let's talk about Montoya then. His jokes are terrible. Like, they're like bad dad jokes for like bad VOD movies. Like, nothing like a little head, Padre. It's like, oof, God. Danny, please.
Daniel Baldwin's clearly in this because they wanted Alec Baldwin.
And then he said no.
He said no. And they were like, but my brother looks and sounds just like me.
But Danny was over at Alec's house, mooching on, getting some food out of the fridge, going, what's that? Just go do it. I don't care.
My favorite part about that, I actually remembered this when I watched this when I was like 11 or 12, that he's just eating a burger. He's just eating all the time in the movie. It's just like, that's what I remember. I remember James Woods in The Vampire, and I remember Daniel Baldwin.
He's not a very good vampire hunter. Like, he's just not good.
Well, he's the Jeep guy.
He's the Jeep guy.
His whole thing is pull the wire.
He's the Jeep guy, and he's the only guy apparently that can talk to Katrina and when she's like in her days. Like, there's nothing. He has no special talent.
Well, I think in that case, it's just that it's between him and James Woods. I think Montoya is the only one that can between Montoya and Crow. Montoya is the only one that's going to talk to her like a human being, and Crow's just an asshole.
Oh, okay, but Montoya, the one who backhands her.
Montoya is also not a good guy. It's just the lesser of two evils.
And these guys are just not decent.
But he, in his defense, he smacks her because she bit him, and he knows he's going to turn.
He got cut, and he knows that she's turning, and he holds up his arm to her mouth and go, "Yo, look what you did to me! You cut me!" You don't think she's going to bite
that?
That's
an invitation. Why do you think she was at the window?
It's like you were asking for it, Montoya. Look what you did. Look at all that blood.
I do like that she's still like at that point repulsed, though. So she goes immediately to the bathroom to throw up.
But this is Woods' film. But there's a lot of screen time given to Montoya and Katrina.
There is. Well, because it's almost like they want to shoehorn in this love romantic thing.
Yeah.
But it's really like he's abusive. not nice. And then all of a sudden he's kind of nice and feels bad for her.
And then he's gonna,
for no reason.
Yeah, it's
almost like, oh man, I'm about to go through what you're going through. But you don't really feel that.
Yeah, but he's, yeah.
And they run off into the, they literally,
well, they
drive
off
into the sunset.
They drive off and, well, no, that's at the end. But before that, when she's clearly turning and he's driving with her, he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know what's happening here. You know.
She was just on the precipice of turning into a vampire.
Yeah. And like Montoya also has this weird character trait where
of eating cheeseburgers.
not just that, but he's so focused on cauterizing wounds. Like it, like he's got to find some way to cauterize it where he uses the lighter and then he does something else where he burns himself with the cigarette.
He uses the gun.
The gun. He fires the gun off. He's like big on that. Like, that's his thing.
I wonder if that's John Carpenter's choice or if that was Daniel Baldwin's choice of like, you know, it'd be cool if I cauterize my
wounds. What if I cauterize this room? That's like a Daniel Baldwin thing in movies. All I do is cauterize wounds.
Actually, why don't they do that more in action movies? I'm doing it. Although, to be fair, I always wonder that sometimes in action movies. It's like, you have a fire right there. This guy's, do something. Use the flame.
Yeah.
But he's too much.
So the reason why they have Katrina is because there's a telepathic link between her and the master. Because it lasts within 48 hours for some reason.
That's kind of a vampire thing, though.
All right.
Whatever. I don't know about the 48 hours, but the fact that the master vampire...
Sure. She's not turned. I get it. That's fine. Like, she's like a window to what he's doing, and she mm-hmm. can see what he's seeing, something like that. Which begs the question, why just only turn her if you know that that's going to happen? Okay, regardless, it's a movie. So the idea is that he is looking for this black cross that will make the vampires walk in the day. And he's got this circle pattern that he's been doing in the New Mexico desert or something like that.
He's been trying to hit every church.
Right. But number one, the Black Cross ain't hidden that much. It's like wide open. It's right out in the open.
It's a monastery guarded by monks with crossbows. Yeah,
it's like right there. It's really no great shakes to get it.
He could have just gone to each church. You guys got crossbows?
He could have accidentally stumbled upon it at some better than looking for it the way he looked for it. But regardless of that, he's the only one there, and he's like, I'm gonna do it. And then all of a sudden, the next scene later, all of a sudden there's seven masters pop up just out of nowhere, just like, hey, all right, we're all here, let's go. Where did these guys come from? Shouldn't we have a little bit more with these dudes all of a sudden?
I would have liked the montage of like one of like the lady coming from Russia or something, buying a plane ticket, going through customs.
One full Albuquerque, please.
No connecting flights. This was supposed to be first class. Why is this coach?
Did you notice the cameo by Frank Darabont?
He's the guy that gets robbed, right?
The male at the Buick. Yeah, that guy at the Buick station.
When Daniel Baldwin shows up, he's like, just tell me you're going to let me use the car, like with his gun. Like he's, like, and then he turns around, like, I'm going to blow your teeth out the back of your neck. What? Just steal the car. Don't put on a show.
Yeah, it's all about a show.
I do dad jokes. That's what I do. I'm Montoya. Sorry, I had a wound there.
Got to give him more stuff to do.
Do you know the rules of vampire hunting? Because they do. I have three written down here, but I think there was four. I think there was a rule number six that I don't remember.
Give me the rules.
Rule number seven, don't bury a team member alone. Why? Rule number 10.
Just in case they've turned.
Rule number 10, you can't kill a master at night. This is can't kill a master at night. Not you can't, don't. You just can't.
I think it's like, yeah, basically don't even try.
And rule number one, don't let your partner get bit. It's just like, I feel like Woods just randomly said these rules. I don't even know if these are in the script. So the point is that Woods likes to improv.
Right.
Woods likes to do like what he wants to do, whatever he thinks will work for the scene. And Carpenter doesn't like to do that. If you're not somebody who is conducive to somebody who improvs, you're going to not get along with an actor who wants to just kind of like do his own thing.
Right.
So Carpenter struck a deal with Woods and said like, okay, look, well, let's do one scene my way. And then let's do one scene your way. And then I guess that was agreed upon. And then that kind of turned into Carpenter liking a lot of the stuff that Woods did. And they use a lot of the stuff that Woods did. So, and then kind of, it kind of created a nice working relationship between the two of them, which is probably what added to Carpenter having fun on the set, because he allowed himself to, okay, let's listen to the actor and kind of do what he wanted to do.
Well, that's the thing. If like there's so often that the directors and the actors don't get along, like when you hire, we just talked about Edward Norton, when you hire Edward Norton to be in your movie and you know he wants to take over the edit and he has his ideas.
Well, he has a lot of opinions and he wants to
be
involved.
You hired him.
Yeah.
You know that going forward. He's been in the industry. James Woods has been in the industry.
Right.
Just do it. Either you're going to do it or you're not. If you don't like that, don't hire that actor. You can't just be like, now I hired you, but I don't want you to be you.
Right.
It's like you hired them for what they do. And I think that aspect of like one way, my way, one way, your way, totally work. Like,
yeah,
come up with an agreement, strike a bargain. It's a job.
Right.
You guys have to work together. It's a team sport.
Yeah.
And you can't just be like, well, it's going to be my way. It's like, well, then why did you hire me?
Right. It takes a village to, like I think I said before, it takes a village to make a bad movie. But it takes a village to make a good movie.
Exactly.
You know, like that kind of thing. It's not just one person. And I think that also goes to your confidence as a director or your self-esteem as a creator. Like some people can't do it because some people don't have confidence in the fact that if they do something that's outside their comfort zone, it's not going to work. Some people are like that.
Right.
I mean, if you're not honest with yourself and then you do hire somebody like Edward Norton or like Russell Crowe, who put a lot into the movie, which, I mean, let's be honest, that's what you want. You don't want, I don't want an actor showing up and just like, this is just a gig. I'll just do what I, you know,
lines.
I want somebody that is invested. I don't have a problem with somebody who's saying like, listen, I want to try this. I mean, I get it. They might be a little bit difficult at times, but you have to be straightforward with them and communicate and say, you know, I'll do something that helps the script, but if it doesn't help the script, we have to, you know, we really have to think, sit down and talk about why would we want to do this in the scene.
I'm gonna wear this hat. Why?
Yeah.
Because
I look awesome. Because my manager wants me to. Yeah. It's like, yeah, stuff like. But let's be honest. That's not what people like Edward Norton or Russell Crowe or anyone else that is quote unquote. That's not what they're doing.
Their choices are meaningful.
Right.
And like you always say as well, it's like when we talk about him going off script, as long as they're getting the point across.
Yeah.
That's like when you're directing stuff. That's what you care about is more. If you go off book a little bit, as long as you're getting the dialogue, as long as you're getting the point of what that dialogue was supposed to be across.
Right.
That's what's important.
Well, that's how you make it your role. That's how you make it your lines. I mean, when you watch other people acting and you're like, wow, they're just so easygoing. And, you know, some actors can do that. Some actors can turn any dialogue and do that. Like Gene Hackman's that way. You know, like there are actors that can just do whatever's on the page and do it in their own voice. That's great. Some actors need to kind of change little things and do certain things. And that's fine, too. I mean, with the exception of like trying to get exposition or plot points across, or you need to say that they have to be at the garage at 2 p.m. like stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, but that's agreed upon. That's already known. Yeah, you're right. That's I need to say it like that. But as long as you make it your own, what's the difference? I mean, unless you're doing a period piece where you need to act a certain way and talk with a certain inflection, there's really no reason why you can't be lenient on that and just kind of, you want the best movie. I mean, I don't understand why people, it doesn't matter if it's yours regardless.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's going to say directed by you regardless if you came up with the decision to do a line or they did. So I agree with you. While Woods is good in this movie, Gene Siskel says he should have been nominated for an Oscar for this film. Calm down. Calm down, Gene.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, rest in peace, but calm down. Oof, I'm like, he's good, but like, you know, he's all right.
But at the same time, if it wasn't for, like, I know you don't like this movie.
What, John Carpenter's Vampires?
Yeah.
I don't love it like you love it. I wouldn't say, I mean, it's just, there's so much stuff. Go make your point.
Well,
make your point.
The thing is, if James Woods wasn't in this movie, I think it would be near unwatchable. If you had a different person playing his character, I think he really... I mean, not that he's likable, but he's super watchable. And I'm not saying he grounds it in realism, but he grounds the movie in like that's what you're watching the movie or why you're watching that plus cool vampire effects.
I just have a hard time believing that James Woods in this movie or his character of Jack Crow would ever defeat Valak. I have a hard time believing that he's got the fortitude to defeat it. Because he's older, because he's in his 50s.
Oh, sure.
And like I said, it's a hard living 50s. So
Jack Crow with a whole team behind him is a badass. Crow by himself.
Yeah, that's
can't
why.
Defeat the oldest vampire ever.
And like at the end of the movie, like him and the priest are going to go into that wherever they are and kill like what?
The jail. 50
vampires. Like, no, you're not.
Oh, yeah. They're not getting out of that alive.
Yeah.
That's like, but I like that. That's kind of the one of the other than being in an old West town.
Yeah.
That's kind of an old West kind of ending is. You ready for this? Yeah, like that's Butch.
I got
Cassidy
you.
Running
I got
the,
you. Yeah.
Army or whatever.
Oh, when they jump.
No, when they run into Bolivian Army.
Oh, like, right.
This is the end.
Yeah.
Them going to the nest is the end of them.
Yeah. No, I got you. Yeah. That makes sense. But
The one-on-one in the garage with the master is like...
It's weak. It's a fight. It's a weak fight. It's your ending fight, and it's so...
Let's push each other.
Yeah.
Get hit by debris.
If you can tell me that there's a younger actor who's going to act like James Woods, maybe. Maybe I would like it. But again, we talked about this already with Carpenter's directing style. That's not what you're going to get. You're going to get the fight scene at the end. That's what you get.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. You know
what
I mean? And that's understanding that going in, me being somebody who... I don't know. Maybe I've seen, I want something more visually appealing. That's probably why I'm not as high on it as you are.
I definitely don't like it as much as when I was a kid watching it. I can definitely see a lot of the issues with it, but I do think it's a really fun, it's a fun movie. It's a movie you watch like, those effects are cheesy, but I like them. And like James Woods is really given his all as this kind of cheesy one note, badass vampire hunter kind of character.
The Montoya stuff is a little cringeworthy for me. It's just kind of like, it wears thin. Let's put it that way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's an unbelievable relationship, and it's just kind of like gross. And they go off into the sunset. And it's like, to what? Murdered tons of people?
Yeah.
Like, that's great. I feel like James Woods is saying, yeah, like, what? He's like, 2 days?
He says he's going to give him a head start. Yeah. He's got to murder like 50 people in the jail. But yeah.
when I find you again, I will kill you.
Which, I mean, you know, I don't even know if you need to say that. I think you can be like, you get that idea.
I like that he says it, though.
See, I like when things aren't said.
I know, but sometimes it's like when it's like James Woods saying it, or it's like the last line between two friends, it's like, that's how they leave each other.
Sure.
I'm going to find you, and I'm going to find you. Actually, that's what he says. He says he's going to find him.
Does he say that?
I think he says, I'm going to find you. I'm going to kill you.
So you're even getting away.
Wherever you go, I will find you. I will hunt you down. And I will kill you. The girl too. Why can't they ask my friend?
I was a little disappointed how quickly Cary Tagawa got offed. And I guess he was a little upset as well.
Oh, yeah. The note I have here was that he... So he has a small role.
His whole team.
Well, the whole team is a small role because they kill the nest, and then the next scene they all die. And he wasn't a fan because he tried to talk to Carpenter about his motivation, and Carpenter rebuffed him. It's like, you're in two scenes, man. Like, while, again, we just sat here and talked about
actors
making choices and kind of working with actors. It's like at some point, though, like if you're only in two scenes, like what else can you do?
Yeah, you were hired for two scenes. You knew what your character was going to do.
Right.
It's like you can't go, oh, can I not die? How about if I kill the master in this hotel room real quick?
I know Kung Fu. So I could do a really wicked kick off the wall. but this whole point about, you know, actors and what they bring to the table. We talked about this with The Burbs, our very first episode, where Tom Hanks had the comment where he envisions, like, it's not the director's responsibility to make sure that the actors know their roles, like bring, like the actors should know what they're doing and should do, you know what I mean? Like they come prepared kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And you shouldn't look to directors to guide you in what the, you shouldn't look to the directors to guide you in what decision you're going to make. That's how Tom Hanks is. And I like that. I appreciate that. I think it's still a collaborative effort. So I think you still have that give and take a little bit.
Right.
But I think what he's talking about is somebody showing up and being like, okay, so like, what's my motivation here? Like, you should know it.
No.
You should have an idea.
You have that initial meeting with the director or at the read through, the table read, if you have a table read. You talk about all that stuff. Then you have your notes, you develop your character within those motivations, and then you come to set ready to go. The director shouldn't be motivating like why you're doing something. You should be saying, hit that mark. Let's do another take. You were a little low there. Can you amp up or tone down your emotion? Not be able to work with why you should be mad in the scene.
Right.
You should know why you're mad in that scene, or know why you're sad, or know why you're dying, because you're not important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of like auditions. Like I understand you need them. Because you need to see like if they can do something or they can take direction. But like, I think auditions are the first stage. I think you're not going to really know your cast unless you pair them together and see them do the lines that you have for the script and see them like start envisioning them in the role.
Right.
And I think from that, comes the conversations you're talking about, how you sit down, like, okay, listen, this is what I want. This is what we want to do. What do you think? Like stuff like that. So I don't like solely picking somebody up straight from the audition. Oh, they can do it. They're not like, you really need to see them with other people, I think.
Well, I think that's why you have steps in auditions.
Right.
Like initial, and then you pair them up.
Well, some people don't. Some people just kind of like, they get straight from the audition and then that's it. But right. I hear what you're saying. Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as we always like to ask, why do you think this is forgotten? Well, I think we already know, but what do you think?
Well, it's A, James Woods.
So here we go again. I really don't think that people don't watch this because James Woods.
No, I don't think James Woods doesn't have a huge stigma to what he's already made. I think that James Woods in that he's not a huge draw. It's not like
he's not a big star anymore.
Yeah.
Right. His regardless of how he is now in terms of like what he does online and
what you think of
not inappropriate,
publicly.
Not great, and we don't agree with that. But what we're trying to say is that he's just not a star anymore.
He was never an action star.
No, not an action star, but he was popular. He was a draw. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like you're not going back going like, well, let me watch these James Woods pictures.
Right.
And I think that in terms of John Carpenter's other films, who's thinking vampires as his number one picks when you've got Halloween, you've got The Fog, you've got The Thing, which is amazing.
Yeah.
You got 80,000 other Halloweens, and you've got Assault on Precinct 13. Right after this, he does Ghosts of Mars or whatever that one was.
The one with Ice Cube.
Yeah, he does a bunch of weird ones right after that.
Mm-hmm.
He's just got such a plethora of movies, and this really isn't straight up horror, and it isn't straight up action. And if you're looking for a vampire action, this is, 98?
Yeah.
Isn't Blade also 98?
Oh, yes. We didn't even talk about that. Yeah, so Blade actually came out the 21st of August. So it had already a couple months head start. And, I mean, I can't... I when I go back and watch Blade, some of it doesn't hold up. Some of it does, but some of it doesn't hold up for me. But it was extremely popular, same year. So that already, you know...
Right.
It's kind of
the same kind of, like, a vampire action. So I think that hurts it.
Yep.
If you're looking for a vampire action movie, you're going to watch Blade, or you're going to rewatch Buffy and Angel.
True. True.
And I think that this is kind of a time when there were a plethora of vampire things, pre-Twilight, where vampires were all the way. Like Interview with the Vampire is also probably pretty close to this, right?
Interview with the Vampire was 93.
Oh, it was really that long ago? Okay.
Or 94.
And then you got some of the Anne Rice ones.
It was the same year as In the Line of Fire, because I know that because that was the first weekend I worked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it was the same year. I want to say it was 94. It was 94 because I remember working that opening night and the line was long because this is when we worked at a 4-screen theater and the line was long because it was both the people for In the Line of Fire and for Interview with the Vampire. And you knew who the Interview with the Vampire people were because they were all dressed up as vampires.
They're all goth.
And the line, I'd walk up and down the line with a flashlight and be like, oh, now Seton, let's go. Interview the Vampire's this line and In the Line of Fire's this line. And it went outside, and you know this, but it went outside mm-hmm. the fourplex, outside the door, down that old access road, down that road, like hooked around. Like it was outside.
Nice.
So yeah.
I'd never seen it that busy.
Yeah. Oh,
I've also went to the matinees with the fourplex.
That was when the fourplex got movies. And then once they built Showcase Milford, we didn't get movies anymore.
You got the movies they didn't watch.
Because you build a theater 5 minutes down the road. Not even 2 minutes down the road, and we can show the same films. What happens to the ARF theater? We get the crap.
You get Spawn.
Yeah. Yes. Oof. We did get Back to the Future 3.
Impressive.
Anyways.
But yeah, I think that like that those other you're looking for a vampire movie, you're gonna do that. If you want a neo-noir Western vampire movie, you're gonna watch Near Dark. So I think that it's in a weird place. And I think that the cheese is why I think I appreciate now the cheese. And when I was a kid, I thought it was cool. But I don't think maybe that's if you're looking for that, you can look for this movie. But I think
you have to be a Carpenter fan.
Yeah.
To like this movie in terms of or to forgive it or what we talked about, which was the technical side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not down again. We're not down on Carpenter. It's just that's what you're getting.
Yeah. He's made some awesome stuff.
Right. But yeah, I think because Woods is not a star anymore, not in the spotlight for a good reason, I should say. I mean, he's in his 70s now, so it's not like he's got to, you know, be carrying films.
Right.
And I doubt he's going to work again. So, but regardless of that, it's an older film. I mean, 98, it's a 98 movie, but it feels like almost like an 88 movie. Does that make sense? Yep, yeah,
absolutely.
So it's had some time. I would say that if by this is forgotten horror, so around Halloween time, you know, it's going to pop up again. I don't think it's not worth to watch. I mean, just check it out. You're going to want to check out
So, it's just hard to find. It's not streaming right now.
Well,
another thing we got to rent.
Really?
It used to be on Shudder, and then it was off Shudder. So I can still find the placement site for it, but you can't watch it.
So I've done a quick search. Oh, it says it's on Shudder, but you're saying it's not there now.
No, it says it's on Shudder, but you click it and it doesn't appear.
It's on Prime.
Prime free, or does it just
watch now? Yeah.
Then it just got added.
Well, it's Halloween. Yeah, it's October. These movies are all these movies are going to be added. Yeah, absolutely. Watch. So it's on Prime. Go watch it.
This is one of those things you watch on Halloween time.
Absolutely. All these movies that you don't hear, they pop up around October.
You know, it's interesting, though.
What's up?
Trick or Treat is free all year round until October comes around.
Oh, because it's popular.
Because it's popular. Yeah. And they go, oh, no, now you have to pay for it.
Right. Or you can just own the Blu-ray like I do.
I got to buy the Blu-ray.
So. You should. It's good. I wish they would do another one.
He's working on one.
He is. We were big fans of Krampus, which is one that he did. And yes. We did that last year for one of our episodes. I think it was around holiday time.
It was our Christmas episode.
The Trick or Treat's a really good movie. And we shouldn't really be comparing it to this movie. It's a way different type of horror film.
I just wanted to, I think it's interesting that a movie like Vampire would become free now.
Yeah.
Whereas a movie that is popular, because we're just about how Vampire maybe not.
Yeah.
Something that you want to look up, something that's not forgotten, is all of a sudden you got to pay for it. And then becomes free when you're not thinking about the holiday.
That's how it works, man.
Yep.
All right. Where can everyone find us?
Everybody can find us on ForgottenCinemaPodcast.com or ForgottenEntertainment.com, as we are part of the Forgotten Entertainment family. You can also find us on the social medias at Forgotten Cinema Pod or Forgotten Cinema. We post every weekday, and we post a new commercial for our podcast every Thursday. They're pretty fun. Check them out. You can also listen to us wherever you find podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. Rate, review, subscribe, help our podcast grow. That's how you do it.
Join us next week as Forgotten Horror rolls along. We're going to be doing a kid's movie. Well, man, maybe a kid's movie.
A family movie.
Family movie. The House with a Clock in Its Walls that came out 2018, 2 years ago. So a little new, which I think that not enough people watched.
Nice. All right.
So that's next week. And I guess... Until then, I'm Mike Fields.
I'm Mike Butler.
And this has been Forgotten Horror.
Keep it spooky, y'all. That's right. It's back.
I don't approve that. I've never approved that, and I will never, ever approve that.
I do moving forward.
No kidding. No kidding. Because all my mistakes end in the edit.
That is not true.
That's true.
Just your funny ones.